projects in Africa, which overlap with the interests of Cambridge Africa. Both are concerned with technology and entrepreneurship in rural communities. And the first one I want to look at is Biosciences for Farming in Africa, and you will see some illustrations around about this particular project. But let's just remind ourselves at the start that Africa consists of 62 nations and territories. It's great danger about talking about Africa, but let's just remember how many countries that consists of, with a population of 1 billion today and 2.4 billion, it's estimated, by 2050. And tonight, one in four people living in Africa, it is estimated, will go to sleep hungry. Food production will have to increase by something like 70 to 100% by 2050. And in African nations, 65% of the labor force, of course, is in agriculture, of which more than 50% are women. Now, no single solution will solve the challenge, but significant advances in plant breeding promise to help. And just by adopting existing and available improved planting material and agronomic practices, agricultural production could double or even treble. But it's the latest advances in genomics, in marker-assisted breeding, in phenotype analysis, in computer modeling, they've greatly increased and accelerated the breeding process. And they can help to develop traits for higher yields, resistant to pests and disease, drought and soil salinity, reduced pesticide use and soil damage, enhanced nutritional quality, and better efficiency of nutrient uptake and water use. These are all within sight, though of course many have not yet been realized. But the problems and challenges now lie in the implementation of those impressive scientific advances that have been made, particularly among the plant breeding community. And this is the issue that has not received, in our view, adequate financial support so far, the implementation element. And the aim of this project was to produce a model for dialogue and communication in Ghana, Nigeria, Tanzania, and Uganda concerning smallholder farmers. And these countries were selected for particular reasons: their willingness to engage in the adoption of new technologies, the importance of addressing food security and poverty alleviation, and also because of their regional diversity. And I'd like to spend a few moments in just speaking about this project, which is still in progress, but is possibly coming towards an end for reasons that I'll explain in a moment. So, Biosciences for Farming in Africa, and there you see the website for those of you who would like to follow it. There were three activities that were of particular importance as far as this project was concerned. The first was to produce a series of books called Insights and Viewpoints. These two, Insights was published about a year ago, Viewpoints has recently come out. They're both available on the table in the back. We have plenty of copies. Please take them. We don't want to take any home with us. Insights has been distributed to 5,000 recipients, and Viewpoints, we've just started the distribution process. The purpose of these essays, these are 1,000-word essays. They're highly accessible, and they're there for students and college teachers, but more particularly for policymakers and politicians and decision makers who have to have access to this type of information, which, as I say, we've tried to make highly accessible. Here's the Insights book itself. A second part were media fellowships, and in this case we identified media people from radio, television, print and so on, and they were selected in order to take on board a two-year journalist fellowship, during which time they took part in a series of workshops, which I'll come to in a moment. And the third component was studies on extension and innovation. Having got this scientific knowledge and information, how do you get it to farmers and to people, smallholders, who are actually going to use this and possibly innovate themselves? So the journalists, of which there were 160 altogether distributed through the four countries, Here is a collection, a small group of them, when we met in Accra in December. And that should be December 2013. Here's a group who came to Cambridge in April 2014 for a masterclass in journalism. These, of course, were all African journalists, not European journalists. And here's a small group with Lord Paul Boateng at the House of Lords when we held a final event in April of this year. So the activities resulted in 8 training workshops in the 4 countries concerned, 160 journalists trained, 4 media classes, master classes. Over 1,000 media pieces were published by these journalists during the 2-year period of their fellowship. They met more than 45 African research scientists in their laboratories, and they went to more than 30 African research institutes, more than 40 field trips, and these are the 25 or so essays that were published in the 2 books that I mentioned. What was interesting was that when we took them on field trips, and here we are visiting an example of GM bananas, which have been genetically engineered so that they're resistant to nematodes, which cause great disease to the roots, or potentially to banana wilt disease. These journalists had never been on field trips before, so this was a new experience. In fact, very few of them had ever been to visit a research institute. And here's an example of what the GM maize, which is growing in Kenya. As you can see, this has been engineered to be resistant to drought, whereas the maize that was here grown to one side was devastated by drought. Here you can see the maize is growing extremely well. Here's a group of farmers who are meeting in Tanzania to consider the question of how to take this new information, which is now available, and to what extent is it going to be relevant to the topics that they are concerned with themselves. So as I say, this project is now largely completed, but is continuing in a different form, and you can find out more about that on the website. So that's Biosciences for Farming in Africa, which had an underlying strapline of, can GM crops help to feed the world? So the second project has to do with smart villages, and unfortunately my colleagues, Dr. John Holmes and Dr. Bernie Jones, who Bernie is currently in Malaysia and John Holmes is busy on another activity today. They were unable to attend today, but they are the project leaders and I'm simply speaking on their behalf. Therefore, this is a summary of the work that they're going to do on the Smart Villages Initiative. The concept of a smart village is that energy access acts as a catalyst for development. Education, health, food security, productive enterprise, environment, and participatory democracy are all things that flow from introducing electricity or energy into a village that is off-grid. And in this way, energy access can provide a much-needed driver for sustainable economic development and growth for a major but neglected sector of the world's economy. There are approximately 1.2 billion people who still live off-grid. They have no electricity. So over the next 3 years, the focus of our project will be on off-grid villages where local solutions are cheaper than trying to connect these remote villages to the grid. The grid will play a part to some extent, but it will not cover the 1.2 billion people who currently live off the grid. So over the next 3 years, our focus is going to be on that aspect because local solutions are cheaper than grid extension. And a key aim of the Smart Villages project is to identify the framework conditions which are necessary to foster entrepreneurial initiatives to meet the off-grid energy challenge, and which will ensure that government and donor funding achieves maximum leverage of private sector involvement. Now, I'll just go through briefly a series of slides that tell you some of the ideas behind this project, which, as you can see, has only just started. The picture we have of universal access to electricity by 2030, which is the long-term aim, This is the IEA World Energy Outlook, that there should be these new connections in rural areas, extending the grid by 30%, but 70%, as is estimated, will still come from microgrids and particularly from home-based approaches. Here we see the idea of energy acting as a catalyst for development, sustainable energy access for development, which would feed into food security, which we've just been discussing, education, which we've heard about earlier this morning, local business and entrepreneurship, health and welfare, and also the democratic engagement. And by democratic engagement, I'm referring here to the opportunities that exist for enabling people to vote in these particular remote areas of the world. The need for a village-level analogue is illustrated here, where we all know this tendency of people to migrate into cities and the great emphasis there is these days on smart cities. How often do you hear smart villages mentioned? And that, of course, is one of the reasons why we're particularly interested in this aspect. 47% of the world's population, 70% of the world's poor live in rural villages. So the components, education and health service, ICT connectivity, distance learning, the world's knowledge base. We're linking here with an Indian entrepreneur from the University of Arizona who's now based in Delhi, who's invented the Swasthya Slate, which consists of 33 diagnostic tests that be carried out in these remote areas. This is through the work particularly of Dr. Anil Seal, who is the executive director of one of the trusts that is strongly involved in supporting this work with the smart villages. So this is to do with modern health services and telemedicine. The second is through ICT connectivity and participating in the governance processes at the local, regional and national levels and creating smart communities with strong rural and urban linkages. And in this connection, the trusts that I've just referred to have been developing an online learning platform, which we're currently using in Tanzania in the previous project we referred to, which enables farmers to have information either on a tablet or eventually on smartphone about the agronomic practices in which they're involved. The particular test we're doing is with Farm Africa in connection with the growth of sesame seed. The third part is fostering entrepreneurship in providing the use of energy services. And the aim here is to capture more of the agricultural value chain, particularly interacting with the smallholders through examples that I referred to previously in Biosciences for Farming in Africa, and also about creating new business. And the fourth is building more resilient communities, better able to respond to shocks. And this involves clean water and sanitation, which we've heard about earlier this morning, affordable and nutritious food. And in this context, we've been particularly interested to see the great interest of many members of the corporate sector in this idea of smart villages. And we already have established some strong links with a number of them here. So the idea behind this is to look at ways of shifting the balance of opportunities between cities and villages. Technological advances and game-changing technologies, which will then reduce this emphasis on the city and hopefully give greater prominence to the village. This is demanding, this is a challenge, and of course, historically, it goes against the trends. But there are a number of examples of where the opportunities that are developing may actually need to new openings. So this initiative, the focus, as I've said, is on mini microgrid and home-based approaches, many of them, of course, based on solar. Policy advice is the second major component. That is, the project is has been designed in order to provide a view from the front line of the challenges of village energy provision for development and how they can be overcome. So the focus here is on the policymakers. And the third component is workshops bringing together the key players, scientists, entrepreneurs, villagers, NGOs, financiers, regulators and policymakers to look at the barriers, how they can be overcome, and what are the messages that we want to get to the funders and policymakers. So this is linking together a number of components. The trust that I've referred to, of which Dr. Anil Seal is the executive director, the Malaysian Commonwealth Study Centre, the Cambridge Malaysian Education Development Trust, ESAC, which is the European Academy of Science Advisory Council, which consists of all the academies in the European Commission, which give specific advice to the European Parliament and also to the European Commission, the National Science Academies, regional global networks of science academies, and expert practical organisations, including the NGO Practical Action, which is part of this activity, the Cambridge Development Initiative, and also TERI, the Energy and Resources Institute in India. So far, we've held the first workshop in Arusha, Tanzania, and all these parties took a very active role, including the academies of Tanzania and Kenya, the regional networks of the academies, the network of African science academies, expert organisations, and also a group from Sweden, including the Royal Swedish Academy. And the outcome of that workshop is summarised in another document that's available outside, which is called Smart Villages, the report of the first regional Smart Villages workshop. And please help yourself if you'd like a copy of that. So we've actually done quite a lot of background work. We did a scoping study looking at village level energy services in Tanzania, Ghana and India with the University of Oxford study team, which was published in January 2013. We've had extension rounds of meetings with the European Commission, the Parliament, the UN, other stakeholders. We held our forward look workshop on what are the potential game-changing scientific and technical developments over the next 10 to 20 years. That is also the proceedings of that on our website, and that was held in January. May I also mention at this point that we plan to hold in January the 12th, a forum here in Cambridge at Trinity College, which will be open to students to bring forward ideas and to think about what are the opportunities that developments in smart villages might offer to the sort of work that you're doing. You may not have thought about it in the context of smart villages, but here would be an opportunity to think through and to discuss with experts how your work might have a pertinence in this respect. So the findings and recommendations of the Arusha workshop are in the document, and I commend it to you if you're interested in it. So finally, can I just mention that the workshops themselves, Tanzania we held in June, January we're in Malaysia, in May India and South Asia, actually this is probably going to be September 2015, and in November, Bolivia, South for Latin America, April, Ghana, and November 2016, Mexico. This which will allow us, we hope, to make a comparative studies between Asia, Africa, and Latin America. So the activities will be to disseminate the workshop report, prepare briefs, training courses and masterclasses, entrepreneurial competition, and then a final event with key stakeholders, which we intend to hold at the moment in Brussels in Addis Ababa for the purpose of policymakers and decision takers. We are working on a vision paper that looks at the whole project. We will prepare a booklet of essays similar to the one that I've referred to, a pocket guide, and here's the website. So the key aim is to identify these framework conditions that are relevant, an underlying premise, maximise social benefit and development impact. An important concern is to catalyse progression through the various levels of energy access. And thank you for your attention.